the righteousness in the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus is talking about. And I noticed Sunday in Craig's sermon, he read 1 Corinthians 6:9, and that says, Paul speaking, do you not know that the unrighteous will not inherit the kingdom of God? Well, that fits right into our lesson. We've been looking at our character and our attitudes. We're looking at things that can help us not to be judgmental. Turn to 1 Corinthians 4. Bobby, would you read verse 3-5?
But to me it is a very small thing that I may be examined by you or by any human court. In fact, I do not even examine myself, for I am conscious of nothing against myself, yet I am not by this acquitted. But the one who examines me is the Lord. Therefore, do not go on passing judgment before the time, but wait until the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things hidden in the darkness and disclose the motives of men's heart. And then each man's praise will come to him from God.
And let's go ahead and read Romans 14. Amanda, would you read verse 4 and 10 through 13?
Who are you to judge the servants of another? To his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. Verse 10. But you, why do you judge your brother, or you again, why do you regard your brother with contempt? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God, for it is written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall give praise to God. So then each one of us will give an account for himself to God. Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in brother's way.
Okay, we see in verse 10, show contempt looks to me like a parallel phrase for judge. So when we judge one another unfairly, we're showing contempt for one another. What did y'all put for B? Why should we not judge one another?
For one, it's not our place.
Exactly. It's God's business to judge. It's not our business to judge. So we don't need to put ourselves in the place of God. In 1 Corinthians 4, I believe that's talking about being stewards of the Lord. And so, I know for me personally, I have enough to take care of, taking care of what God wants me to take care of. I don't need to get in His place. And let's look at 1 Peter 4. Gina, would you read verse 1 through 5?
Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh, no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousals, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. And in all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excess of dissipation, and they malign you. But they shall give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead.
So Peter's talking about the fact that Christ suffered for us in the flesh. And then he says that we should be of the same mind as Christ. This is very similar to Philippians 2 that we talk about a lot. So he goes on to say that we have ceased from sin. And then he's talking about our walk, and it should be the will of God. And then in verse 3, he's comparing the former walk that we had and that sinners had. And then in verse 4, he lists all the sins. And then is our verse in verse 5 talking about that God's going to be the judge. We all have to answer to God. So, like we said, let's let God take care of his department. Okay, and then the next thing, a reason why we should not judge one another, let's turn to Ephesians 4:29. Jamie, would you read that, please? 4:29.
Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is for edification according to the needs of the moment, that it may give grace to those who hear.
Okay. So, why in these verses, and we're going to look at these verses, what should not come out of our mouth? Why should we not judge one another according to this verse? Is it edifying? Oh, go ahead, Amy.
We're to edify.
Yes. Is it edifying to you if I judge you unfairly? No, it's not. Good morning. Come on in.
Good morning.
Okay, let's look at 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Would you read that, Amy, please?
Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another, just as you also are doing.
Okay, so we have the same thing, edification. And also, the parallel word here is comfort. We want to be comforting to one another. If we're looking for that speck in your eye, that's not going to be very comforting. Look at 1 Corinthians 10:23. All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things edify. So in this verse, we want to be helpful to one another. And like the first verse, anything that comes out of our mouth should be edifying to one another. We don't want to knock each other down and not be edifying. And look at Romans 15:2.
In that last verse, if you keep reading the next verse, let no one seek his own good but that of his neighbor, I think that just kind of follows through with when you're speaking to someone, are you seeking your own good? Are you just being selfish? Are you upset? Is that why you're speaking? Or do you have another motive that is, you know, a higher motive than just I'm angry about this situation? You know, if you are in a situation where you have to make a judgment or you have to let somebody know that what they're doing is not a wise decision, why are you trying to convey that to that person? Is it because you're just really mad, or do you have some reason for God that you're doing that? Because there are times when we do have to make a judgment, and we do have to talk to people and give critical judgment, unfortunately. It's not for us, but think about it. Is it for your own good, or is it for the good of your neighbor?
Mm-hmm. And we do have a higher good, and that's like we read in 1 Peter, to do God's will. Thank you. Okay, Romans 15:2. Let each of us please his neighbor for his good, leading to edification. This is just what Jamie was talking about. Okay, the next thing I have, turn to Galatians 6:7-8.
don't know if it was in these, necessarily in these verses, but just thinking about it as we were going through it. You know, if you were to say something about someone, you know, gossiping or whatever it could be, or judging them, someone else can hear that in a different way, interpret it, and therefore they have their own judgment. And so it can just continue to go into a vicious cycle of wrong interpretation, or, you know, you might just give someone else a different look at something that they shouldn't be looking at it that way. You know, yes. People want to hear something, they're going to run with their thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, being careful what you do say about certain situations.
We need to stop and think sometimes.
A lot of times we are not talking to the person that we're trying to correct. We're talking to other people pointing out their wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
definitely wrong. And I wanted to mention, I had some conversations this week with some of you. I meant to say this before we started. I don't think having a disagreement with something somebody does or the way they do it is the same thing as what we're talking about. We can have a different opinion. We can disagree. That's not discriminatory judging that we're unfounded that we're talking about. Okay, let's look at Galatians 6. And why in this verse should we not be a critical judge? Lauren, would you read verse 7 and 8?
Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. When he sows to the flesh, will of the flesh be corrupted. But when he sows to the spirit, will of the spirit be everlasting.
Okay, so what did y'all put for this? I put we're going to reap what we sow. Last week we read in Matthew 7, it says, well, let's go ahead and turn to Matthew 7. It was our original text. This whole passage again. Elizabeth, would you read verse 1 through 5?
Judge not that you do not judge, but with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite. First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly where there is a speck from your brother's eye.
Okay, so in verse 2, we're talking about we're going to reap what we sow. And verse 2, that whatever measure we use with one another, that's going to be measured back to us. And we're going to talk about the golden rule, but it's the same idea. If I judge you unfairly, is that how I want you to judge me? Probably not. So that's what that's talking about. All right, let's look at James 2:12. Verse 12 and 13, so speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment is without mercy to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. James is saying, and I think this is the same word as compassion. Mercy is more important than our judgment. We need to have mercy and compassion with one another. And turn to Matthew 18. We're not going to read this in class. It's a lengthy passage. I think what Jesus is teaching here is this compassion that James was talking about. Peter asked Jesus the question, how often shall my brother sin against me, and how often shall I forgive him? And Peter said up to 7 times, and Jesus said, no, 70 times 7. I think we all understand that Jesus is not saying we need to forgive each other 490 times. That's like a figure of speech. And so then he tells this parable about the king who's going to settle his accounts. And so the master calls in his servant, and he says, I want you to pay everything you owe me. And verse 25 says, but as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and children and all that he had, and that payment be made. So the servant fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. So the master had compassion, and he forgave all the debt. So that servant called his servant in, and the same thing happened. And he did not show compassion. In fact, he threw the man in prison because he couldn't pay his debt. And the first master in verse 33 says, should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you? And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. So my heavenly Father also will do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother his trespasses. So we see here a vivid picture of having compassion with one another. And this is the same idea that we've been talking about. We're going to reap what we sow. We need to look at one another. If we make this judgment and think, how would we want one another to view us? Okay, any comments on reaping what we sow? That was everything I had for reasons not to make the judgment. Did y'all have any, come up with anything else? Okay. Most of the rest of the lesson is going to be, I call it remedies for this unfair judging. And you know, really, these last two could go together as far as we could take number four and say that's the same thing. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians 13. I think we all know this is love. Notice in verse 1 and verse 2 and verse 3, Paul says, but have not love. This is sandwiched in the middle of spiritual gifts. So verse 1 is saying, even if I could speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, he's making an intentional exaggeration. You would be just like a sounding brass or a clanging cymbal. You would only be making noise if you don't have love. And verse 2 says, if I have all the gifts, the spiritual gifts, but if I don't have love, I'm nothing. And then verse 3, if I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. So without love, and this fits right into what we're studying, we need to love one another and think about how we're judging one another. Bobby, would you read verse 4 through 7?
Love is patient, love is kind, it is not jealous, love does not brag, it is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly, it does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a long suffered. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things.
Okay. So we talked about envy last week. If we love one another, we're not going to envy one another. We need to be patient. Parade itself, I believe. To me, that's the same thing as this hypocritical, we talked about the Pharisees. Puffed up, we saw that in 1 Corinthians 5 when we were looking at things that God expects us to judge. Love doesn't behave rudely, and Jamie mentioned does not seek its own. It's not provoked. It thinks no evil. If we love each other like we should, and we don't think evil of one another, it's going to be hard to nitpick and look for that speck. Look at 1 Peter 4:8. Gina, would you read that, please?
Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins.
So, in this verse, and we're going to look at another verse, what kind of love are we talking about?
Caring love.
Caring love. And Peter says fervent love. Look at Romans 12, 9 and 10. Amanda, would you read verse 9 through 11?
Did you say
Romans 12?
Okay. Let love be without hypocrisy, abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor. Not lagging behind in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord.
So here we have fervent again. This is the deep love that we should have for one another. And this is, we've been reading, this is one of our one another passages, is loving one another. Let's look at 1 John 3. Chapter 3 of 1 John is talking about the kind of walk that we should have, the way that we should live. And it's also talking about, we might call it true love or real love or what love is. Look at verse 16. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. So we know that Jesus loved us because of what he did for us. And we should use that same example in the way we love one another. Any comments on love? Okay. Turn to John 12. We read this last week. We've got to notice one verse. This is the story where Jesus was taking the money and he was complaining because Mary was doing something for Jesus. Verse 6 said this, he said not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money box and he used to take what was put in it. And we just read Matthew 5. And we want to, if we consider how bad it is to judge one another, that may help us. Did y'all have anything else from these verses? I was looking for one word that Jesus talks to the Pharisees about. It's hypocritical. And I need to correct something I said last week. I said that Matthew 7, 1 through 5 was talking about hypocritical judging, and it is, but it's also talking about hypocritical judging. It's talking about both. Hypocrite is a word we don't want to pass over very lightly. It's pretty serious and it's pretty strong. The definition of hypocritical is one whose walk and talk don't match. Most of the things I found have to do with a person's religious life. And doesn't that remind us of the Pharisees and Sadducees? Someone who's acting good or religious and they're not. Okay, look at Matthew 6. Look at going to look at some verses in there that have to do with hypocrisy. Again, this is the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is teaching righteousness. Verse 2 says, therefore, when you do a charitable deed, do not sound a trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory from men. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward. One thing I see about hypocrites in the Bible is they get their glory from men. Excuse me, they get their reward from men, whereas our reward comes from God. Look at verse 5. And when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you, again, they have their reward. Look at verse 22 and 23. The lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? I'm sorry, that was the wrong verse. Okay, I was looking for Matthew 22. Susan, would you read verse 17 and 18?
Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to give a poll tax to Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their malice and said, why are you testing me?
So, Jesus could always read their minds, and he knew when they were just testing him. If you look back in verse 15, then the Pharisees went and plotted how they might entangle him in his talk. This was normal for the Pharisees, and Jesus always knew it. You know, they were never interested in what he was teaching or what he had to say. Anytime they asked him a question, they were just trying to trip him up. Look at Luke 11. We have a similar situation. This is opposition. If you look in verse 16, others testing him, sought from him a sign from heaven. So we have this whole passage where they were testing him. And look at chapter 13. If you look in verse 14, the ruler of the synagogue was very indignant because Jesus healed on the Sabbath. And this happened several times where he healed on the Sabbath, and they were so hypocritical. They thought they were so good and righteous that they wanted to chew Jesus out because their interpretation was that he was disobeying the law, and that was never the case. Any comments? Hypocrisy. Jamie.
One of my favorite songs is Psalm 139, because when I'm upset about something and I feel like I need to make a decision, maybe like help someone out or whatever, I think that this is a really good verse to remember, especially if you go to Psalm 139, verse 23 and 24. Well, even just the whole song is beautiful, especially the first six verses, but also the last two. He says, search me, O God, and know my heart, try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there be any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way. I think when we're judging someone, if we can say this prayer to God and say, search me and know my motives for why I'm acting this way, I think that we can clear your conscience, because I know that sometimes you are, unfortunately, we're in situations we have to make a judgment, and it's not fun. You know you're going to hurt someone because that judgment, is not a positive judgment. But I think that if you can actually pray a prayer like this, that if your heart is pure before God, then you can just kind of rest yourself and go, okay, I'm not making a judgment for this judgment because I'm hypocritical or I'm trying to be hurtful. I think if you can speak the way that David speaks in the psalm, then we can go forward and do what we need to do and not do this.
You know, next week we're going to look at God has provided a way. It's not hypocritical judging or hypocritical judging. But God has provided the avenue for us to go and talk to one another, like you're talking about, in the right manner. So thank you for that. Okay. Turn to Matthew. Jamie, would you read verse 12? Matthew 7:12.
Therefore, however you want people to treat you, so treat them, for this is the law of the prophets.
What do we call this sometimes? What in here? The golden rule, yes. And the golden rule is the application of love your neighbor as yourself. This is a practical application. In Leviticus 19:18, the Lord said, love your neighbor as yourself, for I am the Lord, speaking to the Israelites. All we have to do is treat one another in the way that we want to be treated. Let's look at Romans 13. Lauren, would you read verse 8-10?
Chapter 13.
Yes.
Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. But one of the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, all are summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law.
If love does no harm to a neighbor, am I going to steal from you if I love you? Am I going to try to take your husband? And we can go right down the list of all the sins that we know about. This is what we consider. If we love one another and love does no harm to a neighbor. Look at Galatians 5. Verse 14, for all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, beware lest you be consumed by one another. So this is not what we want to do. Okay, turn to Acts 8. Look at a very good reason. Well, we don't want to be critical of one another. In verse 1, now Saul was consenting to his death, of course that's Stephen. And look in verse 3, as for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering every house and dragging off men and women, committing them to prison. Look in chapter 9, verse 1. Then Saul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord. And then look at the end of verse 2. Whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. Do we think of Saul as a model citizen? No, we don't. But God saw something in Saul. Let's look at verse 13 through 16. Elizabeth, would you read that?
Chapter 9?
Yes.
Then Ananias answered, "Lord, I have heard from many about this man, how much harm he has done to your saints in Jerusalem. And here he has authority from the chief priests to bind Paul and call on your name. But the Lord said to him, 'Go, for he is a chosen vessel of mine to bear my name before Gentiles, kings, and the children of Israel. For I will show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake.'"
Okay. What did God call Saul in verse 15? Chosen vessel. God saw the good in Saul, and he saw the potential that he had. And so that's how we need to view each other. We need to look for the good in one another. There may be something, I may be driving you up the wall, but I hope you look for the good in me. And so this is what we need to do. Look at 1 Timothy. Chapter 1, verse 13. "Hold fast the pattern of sound words which you have heard from me in faith and love." I'm in 2 Timothy. Verse 12 says, "And I thank Christ Jesus our Lord, who has enabled me, because he counted me faithful, putting me into the ministry. Although I was formerly a blasphemer, a persecutor, and an insolent man, but I obtained mercy because I did it ignorantly in unbelief." Insolent means violent. Saul says about himself, he was a violent man. So, we need to look for the good in one another. And I think Saul is a real good example. Any comments on that?
What I picked up was the mercy.
Mercy, again. Okay. God is very compassionate with us. We've been seeing this word mercy and compassion a lot in this study. And that's how we need to be with one another. Okay, turn back to Matthew 7. This is what we need to do no matter what we're having a problem with. Whether it's unfair judging or just whatever it might be. Gina, would you read verse 7 and 11?
"Ask and it shall be given to you. Seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more shall your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask him?"
What did y'all have for E? What do we need to do?
We need to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And seek and knock.
And I was looking at this like the idea of praying or having a problem with. And we know that we all have different areas that we have problems with. I look at things I have a problem with, and I see ones that don't have a problem with, and I think, that must be nice. I can't even imagine what it's like not to have this problem. But everybody has their own areas that they need to work on. Philippians 4:6 says, "Let your requests be made known. Be made known to God." So we need to hand over to God just whatever it is. We need to relieve our minds of care. And Luke 8, turn to Luke 18. This was the persistent widow. She did not give up. Verse 1, we see he's telling this parable that men always ought to pray and not lose heart. So verse 2, there was a certain city and a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. And the widow came in and said, give justice to me, in verse 3, from my adversary. And the judge wouldn't do it for a while, but afterward he said to himself, though I don't fear God or regard man, because this widow troubles me, and this is our persistence. I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me. Verse 6 says, hear what the unjust judge said, and shall God not avenge his own elect, who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? So, if God doesn't answer us the first time, we need to not lose heart, and we need to continually pray. One thing I had in my notes, never give up praying. That's what we see here. And even if we're really having a problem, whether it's this or some other sin, just don't give up. Keep on praying about it. Look at Luke chapter 11. We're going to look at verse 5. Sometimes persistence means boldness and tenacity, which means to hold firmly. Gina, would you read verse 5 through 10?
Luke 11, 5 through 10. And he said to them, suppose one of you shall have a friend, and shall go to him at midnight, and say to him, friend, lend me 3 loaves, for a friend of mine has come to me from a journey, and I have nothing to set before him. And from inside he shall answer and say, do not bother me. The door has already been shut, and my children and I are in bed. I cannot get up and give you anything. I tell you, even though he will not get up and give him anything, because he is his friend, yet because of his persistence, he will get up and give him as much as he needs. And I say to you, ask, and it shall be given to you. Seek, and you shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened to you. For everyone who asks and receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it shall be opened. Now suppose one of you fathers is asked by his son for a fish. He will not give him a snake instead of a fish, will he?
Yes, thank you. So we see that Luke uses the word in here, persistence. So we need to stay after it and be persistent and let God know we're serious. And then look at Mark 11:24. Jesus said, therefore I say to you, whatever things you ask when you pray, believe that you receive them and you will have them. So we need to have confidence when we go to God, knowing and believing that he's going, if he doesn't give what we think we ought to get, there's a reason. But we need to have confidence that he's there and that he's listening. Okay, we'll do this last one. This is what I was looking for here is just to see who these scriptures were talking about. What did y'all have for F? We've read Matthew 7, and we had 3 parallel passages. One was James 4, and the other one was Romans chapter 2, talking about hypocritical judging. So what did y'all have for F?
I have a question. I've always had trouble with Mark 11, verse 24, because is Jesus talking to just his apostles here because he can give them special powers and they can move mountains? Or is he talking to every single Christian here? I've always wondered that, because this verse is saying that, you know, whoever says this mountain be taken up and cast into the sea and doesn't doubt it, it's going to happen. And that's not how our lives are now. You know, I could pray all day long for another child, but I may not ever get another child, you know? So I just question, does this verse apply to every Christian, or is this a verse where Jesus is speaking specifically to his apostles? Because, I mean, this verse is, you know, a lot of people take this verse and they say, if you ask for something, you're going to get it, and that's just not how life is. We don't get everything we want. So I didn't know that, because I was just reading this verse last week, and I was for a verse like it, and I was just wondering to myself, is this every Christian, or is this only two apostles?
I'm not sure, Jamie, I'll tell you honestly, but I will study this, and we'll talk about it next week. That's a very good question. Okay. And on the F, what did y'all have for F? What I was looking for here, in each one of these scriptures I gave you, it used the word brother. We need to realize that we're brothers and sisters. We're a family. And we need to think about that if we have a problem with this judging. And we read Romans 14 a while ago, and we talked about show contempt is the same word as despise. Let's look there real quick. I want you to look up at the beginning of the chapter. Romans 14. Look in verse 3. Paul said, "Let not him who eats despise him who does eat, and let not him who does not eat judge him who eats, for God has received him." So the people that were weak were judging the ones that were strong, and the ones that were strong were showing contempt for the weak. We don't want to do either one of those things. Hebrews 13 says, "Let brotherly love continue." 1 Thessalonians 4:9 and 10 says, "Let brotherly love increase more and more." So, and one thing, we're going to stop there. I didn't get to G, but I'll do that next week. I forgot to mention, we had a question last week about Miriam. Why did God punish Miriam and he didn't punish Aaron? And I cannot find anywhere else in the Bible where that's talked about. And it was, as was said last week, we're never going to know. I mean, I don't have anything else to say about that. We are not told why Miriam got punished and Aaron didn't, and maybe someday we can find out. So I said I would mention that.